being Sunday, and that nuthead up there in the post office, we can't get any tomorrow. So that'll be 3 days in a row, and the news broadcast has been given that 56 Viet Cong, or 60-something Viet Cong, were killed attacked in an artillery outpost and got within 25 yards, and they were firing point blank, and a bunch of Americans killed, a whole bunch of wounded. And it's right in the area, it seems, where you are, and we're just sitting here scared to death. So we just can't have any peace of mind until we hear from you. That's the reason we're so anxious. I know you've been through something this last 11 months that's been indescribable, but so have we here waiting. I was in the other war. I thought it was bad from that end, but this end, I believe, is worse. Because this not knowing business, it seems like it's a whole lot worse. I know it is on you mentally, and I believe it is on you physically. I think it's been about a week since we recorded anything for you, and I thought when Mom Ellen was up here and Brendan and them might come, I thought I might get them to say a word or two while they were here, or at least give them the opportunity. We've got this pool and one more. We wanted to try to get off before you left over there. Just hope and pray. May God's richest blessings be upon you and all your outfit. We're on pins and needles here waiting to find out what your orders is going to be. Of course, the main thing now, under the situation the way we see it, is to know if you're safe. And after that, then, if you are, we want to know if you have got your orders and so forth, and that's what we're so anxiously awaiting. We know you're going to tell us as soon as you know yourself, but the way the mail situation is and the way the war is going over there, it just makes it bad from every angle, yours as well as ours. The Gazette published that letter that I got from Captain Holmes, and everybody I've met up and down the street has commented on what a wonderful letter that was and what a high letter of praise for you. On your tape, you mentioned that you had felt like that you had done your job well while in Vietnam. There's nobody in the world feels it also more than Mama and me. We feel like that you've done way under more than your share. So hurry up and come home. We're getting everything ready and wanting you to home so bad. I'm in your bedroom here now, and Mama Ellen and Mama are in the kitchen washing breakfast dishes. And I want to talk to you a little while, try to get this tape all wound up and get it in the mail as soon as we could get it made. Maybe you'll get to hear it before you leave. I don't know whether you've got rid of your tape recorder or whether you'll have to borrow one to play this on or what, but maybe you can listen to it. I'm not saying these words to try to discourage you. I just want to tell you that if there's anything I can do to encourage you, that's what I want to do. Try to build you up and help your morale and just hurry home. I got word this morning, Tom Hicks' wife called, said Tom was going on the 3rd of December, which is the day I start my vacation, to the hospital back in Dallas, and on the 4th they're going to operate on his eye. That'll be on Monday, the next day after he goes over there. So they're not facing a very excitable Christmas season. Lee Van Zandt is already retired, and his house is burned, and they're living up here in town. They were here night before last, and they talked like they might want to rent the apartment just between us and a lamppost. I kindly hope they don't. Because Lee is pretty wild. He's going to want you to race this, of course, because I don't want nobody else's ears to hear it, but he's been married 6 times, and he drinks pretty heavily, and he's just been a pretty rough character. He's, I think, been in several scrapes, one thing or another. He seems like a good boy outwardly, and I hope he remains that way. If he moves up here, I hope he does behave and take care of himself. Mama Ellen was here when the mailman run, and we didn't get any mail. We were just sitting talking for a while. I guess we waited a little bit too long, and Brenda knew that we didn't get a letter yesterday, and she was over anxious, so she called and wanted to know even before we called. We usually call and tell her, but we didn't have time this morning. She called herself. Well, we had a little excitement down south of town here a day or two ago. It's been going on for a long time. A telephone man's been nearly living down at Phoebe Winchester's house while he's not there. But so is Bruce Sparrow. Bruce's wife caught Phoebe's wife and Bruce out in the orchard a year or two ago. But that didn't end the thing, and now then Phoebe caught Bruce and his wife down around Lafayette somewhere.
The old pump station
down there. Caught them going after it pretty strong, and I think they said that Bruce's wife wasn't going to get a divorce, but James has already put in for divorce. And I think they're already separating the furniture and everything, so that's the best way I know of to break up a marriage. It's just been a long time. It's been going on all the time, and everybody knew it except James, I guess. He might have known it. He just wouldn't believe it until he saw it himself. But then, Otis, James's daddy, has been that way for years and years, and he don't hide it or nothing, and they've told Otis's wife, Opal, about it, and she gets mad at anybody that mentions anything like that, says Otis wouldn't do anything like that, and you can see him, you know, most any time of the night around some of these old women up here to wash her tears and things. And of course, Otis Alexander's been that way for 30 or 40 years. There's just several that seem like that's all they study. Opal told Otis Winchester that he asked her for a divorce, and she told him that that was her home, and she wasn't going to give him a divorce, and he could stay there or get out. It didn't make her any difference. That she'd worked hard all her life, and that was her home, and she was not going to leave. So that's the way that situation is. They're probably living under the same roof. He's going his way, and she's going hers. Well, she lives like a hermit. She stays right there. I doubt if she ventures out as far as the road to get her mail, if she ever gets any. You never see her anywhere. That's what I've been trying to say all the time, that if people don't go to church and pray and read their Bibles, they're subject to do anything. I have no conscience about wrong. And most of the time, they wind up doing wrong, of all descriptions. God made it, man, and man deserves to praise him and glorify him and honor him. And if he don't do that, then the devil will. The devil will have his way in the human being's life. So it's a battle between God and the devil, and it's up to man who he's going to serve. And that's the way it turns out in just about every case. Whatsoever you sow, that shall you also reap. And if a person sows sin, he's going to reap it one day in his life. Looks like the tape's about to run out. I'll turn it on and get it ready. Aunt Mabel will be here in a few minutes. Maybe Mama or Mama Ellen or somebody will want to say something. We'll try to get it ready and get her off towards Vietnam. I just hope you're well.